Hello, welcome to this AHDB podcast. Can AHDB really add anything on the ground or to the balance sheet? If you're one of those who ask questions like that, keep listening. If you're already a convert, stay with me, as there's something in this podcast for you too. I'm often reminded that agriculture is in the blood of the thousands of men and women who tend our green and pleasant land. Livestock farming and being a grower is often a generational thing, with farms and methods being handed on from father to daughter or son. Lessons about what to do, or perhaps more importantly, what not to do, are hard learnt, sometimes, sadly, at great personal cost to families. In Britain, we continue to have small-scale enterprises at the heart of the industry, which makes a huge contribution to the well-being of the nation, whether food, jobs, or boosting the economy via produce being exported across the globe. Regardless of the numbers of acres owned or tenanted, or for that matter, the size of the levy paid to AHDB, you can access any amount of data and useful information which can help you make informed decisions about your business. For some, AHDB is a network of like-minded people, all with a common goal, to be better at what they do. Sometimes they're drawn together to help with research projects or to implement new approaches to crop management, soil health, or livestock production. I'm John Bates, and in a moment, Phil Bicknell, a beef farmer in Warwickshire, is going to share his story of the difference AHDB has made in his business and farming life. Thanks for sparing the time to be on the podcast, Phil. Being a beef farmer and a levy payer is just part of the story, though, isn't it? Tell us about the other side of Phil Bicknell.
Yeah, in fact, it's probably overstating it as well, John. Full-time, I am AHDB's Market Intelligence Director. So I look after the team that provides all the pricing data that you might see in the back of the farmers with your Farmer's Guardian. It's the team that provides the insight about what's happening at the consumer angle, whether that's the foods that people put in the basket, the changes in behaviour, or where they shop. So the kind of things that were really pertinent earlier in the year around coronavirus. We're the team that gives the basics around the facts and figures about what's happening with trade, what's happening with overall production across the farming sectors.
So you're an economist then, and with all the uncertainty that's been caused by the pandemic and the trade negotiations of the country exiting the EU, and of course not least the harvest results, you must hold your head in your hands sometimes when you look at the circumstances that some farmers are facing.
Yeah, I suppose from my perspective, John, we live in a volatile and uncertain world, and I think that's a phrase that is being used more and more when we're talking in kind of analytical circles. But from a farming perspective, that's kind of no doubt from me. So whether it's the weather, I'm conscious that at this time last year it started raining and didn't really stop. That had huge knock-on impacts for the arable sector, created huge problems for potato lifting last autumn. And then when it stopped raining, we saw a long dry spell that helped people get crops in the ground, but they didn't really get away. And I suppose we've got the physical challenges of farming that I suppose to some extent have always been there, but it just feels like they're a bit more pronounced and possibly a bit more regular or frequent. Alongside that, I suppose I start then thinking about the bigger challenges that are coming our way as an industry. So whether it's around the shifting policy environment, whatever your take on Brexit, we're going to see changes to our trade policy and our agricultural policy. That's going to impact us as the farming industry. Add on top of that, what happens in markets anyway, and some of the uncertainty we see there, and it just makes making decisions really challenging.
So, because of those challenges and the insight that you get from market intelligence, your team do the number crunching. So how does the picture look for the near future? Are you optimistic or pessimistic?
Hope springs eternal, I think, John, isn't it? I wouldn't be doing a bit of farming on the side if I wasn't that positive about long term. And I suppose when I take a step back and do think about the long term, and it's something I just reminded of through the coronavirus impact, is that ultimately the demand for what we produce as farmers is something that is pretty strong and is growing all the time. 3 meals a day, 7 days a week, growing global population growth all help that. And I think that's kind of the big potential at the end of the day that drives the industry forward. And I'm conscious when I look at certainly measuring up UK agriculture to other areas of the economy right now, output from UK agriculture has stayed relatively high. Any other sector of the economy has been hit seriously by the economic slowdown triggered by coronavirus. So long-term, positive. Short-term, I think there's some big challenges that come our way. So whether that is some cash flow challenges that the arable sector might face on the back of what has been a small harvest and a challenging harvest for many, we're still going to want to put crops in the ground. We're still having to invest in the 2021 harvest now, yet many of us will have less to sell. So I think that tends to be one of the challenges. From a personal perspective, and if I think about some of the challenges of last winter and the compounding impact of my fodder availability to feed the cattle this winter, I came through last winter because of the length of it. It started early, it was wet. Very little fodder left over to carry over into this year. Slow grass growth meant that silage and hay crops were down. So if I compare year on year on similar fields, it's about 25% down. So that is the thing at the back of my mind, which then kind of gives me a bit of concern. If somebody could guarantee me that winter this year will be 25% shorter, that would make me a little bit more comfortable heading into the autumn.
So are you really saying that you're conscious that we need to be doing things differently, and that we need to understand that the challenges that are brought about, you know, perhaps unexpectedly by something like a pandemic, that by adapting to the new normal, then farming will ride the storm?
Bits of both, John, I think, in that respect. When a storm approaches, it's human nature for us to batten down the hatches and let's see if we can ride out the storm. I think in some respects, it's not about a case of waiting for things to get back to normal. It's about adjusting to the new normal. So just waiting and seeing or riding out doesn't feel like maybe the best approach in some circumstances. And I think more significantly, it's probably thinking through what you can do to prepare and maybe anticipate some of the things that are coming. I'll give you an example. Drought of 2018, if I think about the family farm again, really short of fodder. And that was kind of a stressful time through that, because it was, having to feed animals earlier, that increased feed bills, etc. I was kind of determined that if drought happened again, we wouldn't find ourselves in a similar situation. So one thing I did through the course of 2019, and this is an advantage of working at HDB, I went along to some of our monitor farm and strategic farm events on the livestock side that were looking about improving rotational grazing. I used some of the resources that HDB provides around Forage for Knowledge. And I said to somebody earlier this week that investing in a sword stick and a few electric fence posts is hardly agri-tech, but it did let me get in a better position to make the most of the grass that I've got. And that stood me in better stead this time when we had that dry spell back in, April, May, June.
You are, of course, seeing AHDB from the inside, but as a levy payer, you're also saying that your business benefits from the fact that there are various tools that you access. Just talk perhaps a little bit about some of those services and products that AHDB produces that you think have helped you in your business.
I'm talking to you, John. So the first thing I've got to say is podcasts. I've spent a few hours in the tractor cab through recent weeks on weekends and into the evenings. And I think particularly with lockdown, our inability to get along to agricultural shows and events, actually some of those podcasts have been really valuable for me. And it's a really easy way for me to kind of pick up new ideas. And look, for all the language we talk about in terms of knowledge exchange and peer-to-peer learning when we talk about some of those events, actually this is learning from somebody else's mistakes and pinching somebody else's good ideas. And the podcasts have been kind of really valuable for me in terms of some of that. Some of the other things that I guess I've used is trying to think much more about feed planning. So trying to think not in terms of bales per hectare, but thinking much more in terms of dry matter requirements for livestock. And I really should plug as well the stuff we do in market intelligence. So actually kind of keeping in on top of what is happening in terms of prices. We've had, if we look at the last 12 months, really interesting kind of trends in terms of livestock prices, but more generally. And think about coronavirus, when lamb and beef prices took a dip, albeit temporarily. But then I look at where the strength of where prices have been more recently. I look at lamb prices being actually above the range where you would normally expect them. You know, they're at kind of 5-year highs for this time of year. That all, it helps me to kind of just reassess actually, when am I going to market and sell livestock?
You were telling me before we started to record, you were telling me that you're an avid reader of Forage for Knowledge.
Yeah, so sign up for that. And I must admit, I've got a little bit geeky about the Forage for Knowledge, the tracking it does of grass growth figures, and the other aspect that I've become a little bit geeky about is some of the weather stats and some of the huge amount of weather data that we've got on our website, just hdb.org.uk/weather. And that's also, there's links into Forage for Knowledge there. And I suspect that over the last 12 or 18 months, lots of farmers, lots of us have become a little bit more conscious about checking the rain gauge and measuring just how wet it's been or how dry it's been. And you know, the example for me, John, is that we've had more rain on the farm in August than we had in April, May, June and July put together.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. You talked about meeting up with other farmers and pinching good ideas. I suppose that would be one way to explain the Farm Bench initiative that AHDB is well and truly behind. Is benchmarking, is that something that you see as being increasingly important?
Yeah, I think that particularly when we're looking at the challenges that come our way, there's very little I can do about the price that I'm going to receive for what I produce, because there's thousands of other farmers producing beef cattle. There's thousands producing sheep, there's thousands selling grain onto the market. And in many of those areas, we're talking about essentially something that is in the commodity area. The idea of me getting a better price than the person who sells stuff before or after me is, you know, let's face it, a bit of a challenge. What I can do a better job of, I think, is looking at my own costs and starting to look at those in a more structured way and identifying where there's areas to improve. So I did put the figures into Farm Bench last year. That made some challenging reading, let's be honest, as it maybe does for some of us that have used farm benchmarking. But I suppose what that did flag, it just triggered that curiosity. Why is my cost in a certain area more than other farmers? And just the other bit that I kind of learned from it was just actually, how do I arrange and manage all the information I've got? I'm conscious for us as a farming industry, we've probably never had so much information available. However, making sense of it and making decisions based on it has probably never been so challenging. And that's where I get to take that kind of the experiences that I learn at weekends or in the evenings from doing stuff on the farm to bringing that into the day job and what I do here. Because ultimately, what I'm trying to do is provide the industry with better information, because I fervently believe that better information means better decisions.
Now, that that information, that insight, I know that means that you you don't like to do predictions. And of course, the one thing that everybody wants is they want you to tell us what's in the future. But this podcast is titled Decisions, Decisions, Decisions. And farmers have got to make a lot of decisions. And, you know, a lot of that is done in the dark, figuratively and literally. Should levy payers plan for the worst and hope for the best? What do you think?
It's not bad advice, that, John, but I think we can be a bit smarter than that. And I think we need to be pragmatic and realistic. I talked earlier on about us living in a volatile and uncertain world. And those for me are going to be characteristics going forward. And if we think about what is coming down the track for us as a farming industry, many of us are looking to a future with reduced levels of direct support. Ultimately, that support is going to disappear altogether. Yes, we're all aware of the public money for public goods mantra that we hear from government, and the initial plans that are being developed around environmental land management schemes. However, for me, it feels like, from a business planning perspective, I don't yet know long term what the budget is going to be for that. I don't know what funding I could access, and I don't know what it would cost me to deliver some of the things that undoubtedly they'll want as part of that scheme. So I can't yet factor that financial aspect into my planning. It feels a bit unrealistic. But what I can count on is direct support disappearing. That then lets me take a bit of a closer look at my own business, and I suppose the aspects around contingency plans and trying to think through, actually, if the worst happens, how are we going to react? And I think that as an industry, John, sometimes we take a trial and error approach, or we take a wait and see approach, and actually just taking the time out to think about, right, if certain challenges happen when direct payments go, if there's a blip in prices or a more pronounced drop in prices, do some of that sensitivity analysis, think through some of those contingencies. And we perhaps don't talk in those terms as an industry, but if I come back to the weather, we probably do. We probably thought through in 2018, geez, what we're going to do if feed is short, thought about it again this year. We perhaps just didn't use those business planning terms, but I think we need to do that in a more organized, more structured way.
Yeah, I'm reminded of the phrase that it's when you hear the thunder, it's too late to build the ark. We obtain lots of facts and figures and data, and I know in particular the characteristics of top performing farms is something that you've been very interested in your role at AHDB. Just talk us briefly through the sort of information that's available that levy payers might be able to look at and to help them with their decisions for the future.
John, you caught me on the spot there, because you've got me then trying to recall the eight characteristics of the top performing farms, which I'm sure will come back to me in a moment. But look, I suppose the key thing with that piece of work was that hit home for me was that there's some big differences in the profitability of different farming businesses within the same sector, and it's not down to the land or the resources or the things that they're disposal, it's much more down to the decisions that they make. And when you're comparing the top 25% and the bottom 25%, in some instances that variation is a six-figure sum in terms of the profitability. So we're talking big numbers. And again, it's not because those top performers get a better price than everybody else. It's about how they run their business and the decisions that they make. It's around how they manage their overhead costs. It's about some of the business planning around goals and budgets. You mentioned FarmBench earlier, we talked about that, but one of the characteristics is around actively gathering information and comparing yourself with others. One of the things that hits home with me and Chimes is also having that mindset for innovation and change. Now, as somebody who grew up on the family beef farm, moved away, came back quite a few years later, probably what we do on the farm is still recognisable to anybody that that might have visited 30 years ago. But that doesn't mean that I'm closed to ideas. And again, that's one of the big advantages, I think, of tapping into the resources of AHDB. It does open your mindset, and I might not put them into practice always, but it triggers my thinking. So I suppose that piece of work is something that's kind of useful, I think, to dig out. But ostensibly, it's the kind of things that we offer through the AHDB website, the whole host of tools, products and services. The events that we focus on is all picking up some of that work and some of those key themes that came out of that research a couple of years ago now.
And we'll put a link to the characteristics of the top performing farms in the show notes that accompany this podcast. Thank you to my guest, Phil Bicknell, a beef farmer and the Director of Market Intelligence at AHDB. And thanks too to podcast producer Aisha Shabman. We want to hear from you. If you enjoyed this podcast or you've got any suggestions or ideas for future episodes, please go to the AHDB website, ahdb.org.uk, and fill out the podcast feedback form. Thank you. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.